I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gail Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm. Phil Hoff died last week at the age of 93. He served as Vermont's governor from 1963 to 1969 and was the first Democrat elected to that position since the Civil War. Governor Hoff was a central figure in one of the most notable stories of this state's politics in the last century. That's the shift from Republican to Democratic dominance. When he was elected, he famously shouted to a crowd of supporters in Winooski, 100 years of bondage broken. And today we're talking about Phil Hoff, his career, and the enormous change in the political landscape that he helped to usher in. We're joined for this discussion by two top Vermont reporters. Chris Graff served for many years as Vermont Bureau Chief for the Associated Press. He's also the author of Dateline Vermont, History of Vermont Politics, and his own experiences covering them. Chris, welcome back to Vermont Edition today.
Thanks, Mitch.
Also joining us is Candace Page, now a consulting editor at 7 Days. She spent more than 30 years at the Burlington Free Press and is an inductee into the New England Newspaper Hall of Fame. And Candy joins me now at our VPR studios in Colchester. So great to be with you today.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Now, our colleagues over at VPR's Brave Little State podcast receive questions from listeners and investigate them on the air. And one of the most common questions they regularly get is some variation on the following. How did Vermont become known as so liberal when it was so solidly Republican before? And that question came from Peter Guarco from Burlington, but again, he's just one of many asking something similar. So, Candace Page, let me start with you by asking you to address that very question. How did Phil Hoff, who was not even a native Vermonter, come to score such a huge political win in a state that hadn't seen a Democratic chief executive in more than a century?
Well, I think there are a couple of points that are most important to make. One is that because the Republicans dominated, completely dominated Vermont politics, there were divisions within the Republicans, and there was a conservative wing and a liberal wing. So people who now would be Democrats back then were liberal Republicans. So it isn't as though Vermont was a Barry Goldwater kind of entirely conservative state. That's, and we should also say that while Phil Hoff clearly was the breakthrough figure, things had been changing in Vermont before Phil Hoff. Bernard Leddy was a Democratic candidate for governor in the 50s who came very close to victory. We had elected a Democrat as a congressman once in the 50s. So there, you could say that if it hadn't been Phil Hoff, it would have been someone else. And the other thing I want to say before we let Chris talk about Phil's personal charisma, which certainly was a factor, is that I think it's distant enough in the past now that people assume that the Democrats came to victory that year because of the influx of newcomers. Hmm. Phil was a newcomer himself, and certainly in the mid-60s till 1980, there was a huge influx of people from Massachusetts and New York who came here, not just hippies, but people who wanted out of the urban environment. But it's important to understand those are not the people who elected Phil Hoff in 1961. When I did some writing about this a number of years ago, Frank Bryan, a political science professor at UVM, was adamant on this point that what had changed was that a large number of Vermonters had changed their minds. They were willing to vote for a Democrat or at least vote for a Democrat who was also listed on an independent line so they could vote for him without voting for Democrats. You know, this was after World War II. Television had come to Vermont. Mm. Vermont was not the isolated backwater that it had been. And the men who came back from the war and their wives were much more open, I think, to the wider world.
Sounds like he was kind of the right man at the right time. Chris Graff, Candy has sort of set the stage here for how Phil Hoff was able to be so successful. And she mentioned his personal charisma. Young, good-looking guy, blonde hair, kind of Kennedy-esque in some ways. Did this also help, just his personal demeanor, his charisma, did it help him achieve the highest office in Vermont?
Absolutely. If you were to pick one thing, I think that would be it, the Kennedy-esque approach of him, handsome, energetic, young. He was Protestant, not Catholic. But there were many other factors, and I think when you look at the results, Candy made mention of this when she talked about the independent ballot. Phil Hoff actually received fewer Democratic votes than the Republican candidate did on the Republican ballot. He only won in 62 by 1,300 votes out of, 120,000. So really, when you think about it, there was any factor could have made the difference when you're talking about 1,300 votes. A couple of ones that we should talk about, the incumbent governor, who, by the way, was the youngest governor in the state, F.R.A. Kieser, Republican. He was unpopular. A couple of his party leaders had broken away from him because of decisions he'd made about the Rutland Railroad. Ray Kieser had made some decisions that angered people in part of the state. He wanted to privatize Linden State College, for example. That didn't make him a friend of the Northeast Kingdom. The Rutland Railroad was another. You had some of the folks that he'd angered formed a splinter party, which Candy was making reference to. It was the Vermont Independent Party. And in the end, on that line alone, Phil Hoff got more than 3,000 votes. So that was more than his margin of 1,300. But definitely, being handsome, energetic, and young, campaigning as he did made a big difference. The one other comment I'd make about the brave little state question that came in was sure. I've been speaking about 20th century Vermont politics for a long time, and what I have found in recent years is most people don't remember that Vermont was the most Republican state in the nation. It's sort of a given. They only know Vermont as the state of Howard Dean or Bernie Sanders or Patrick Leahy. Very few Vermonters that I talk to today know that Vermont was the most Republican state for a century. And so that was what got Phil Hoff over the top, this powerful theme that it's time for a change. 100, you know, the quote you used that he used in Winooski that year, that night, 100 years of bondage broken. That was a very powerful theme. And not to spend too much time about the sort of minutiae of the campaign, but very late in the campaign, he accused Ray Kieser of manufacturing an $850,000 budget surplus, and the auditor, who was a Republican, supported Kieser. It was actually really a debate over whether he used cash basis or accrual basis for accounting in the state, but it was just enough to make people think, whoa, maybe it is time for a change.
I remember talking to Bob Kinzel about this, and as I understand it, because again, these things, it's never just one thing. It's a combination of factors, and Ray Kieser didn't do himself any favors, and Bob mentioned to me that Kieser still is the only governor of Vermont who was not reelected to at least one other term. Is that correct? Republican governor?
No. I'm going to draw a blank. Hank, help me here, Candy.
Yeah, but did, I was going to ask you to help me.
So we're going to have to ask our listeners
I think Gibson beat Proctor in the 48 primary, but now I'm sort of drawing a little bit of a blank on that.
We're going to have to throw that out to our listeners. Sure.
Since 62, yes. No incumbent governor has lost.
Yeah, and that's partly because of the 2-year term, and it's a lot easier to get reelected. Candy, what surprises me a bit is not just that Hoff won, but that once he was in office, he didn't really sit on his laurels. He was pretty aggressive about pushing a liberal agenda. This included more state involvement in welfare benefits for Vermonters, among other things. What else did he do once he was elected that probably raised some eyebrows maybe at the time in what was still a politically conservative state?
Well, the first thing that he did that raised eyebrows was in his inaugural address. He said he asked the legislature to take a pause, to have a very short session and go home and give him a year to study Vermont's problems and then come back with an agenda. Well, the legislature didn't go home quickly, but Hoff, in fact, did not put out an aggressive agenda that first year. Then he came back in 1963 with the start of much of what we see in Vermont today. Not everything Phil Hoff tried to do did he succeed in. Decades later, he was still advocating for more consolidation of Vermont school districts. But if we just list the things that happened on his watch, and we'll talk the biggest, and we'll talk about this in a while, was reapportionment.
Sure.
But even a partial list includes abolishing the poll tax, abolishing the death penalty, except in the murder of police officers, moving responsibility for social welfare from local overseers of the poor to a state office. And this was a major thing because it was very hard to go to your to a neighbor, basically, in your town and say you needed help. Hmm. And some overseers of the poor were pretty parsimonious. And there were poor farms that were a humiliation to many people. In the Hoff years, the state tripled state aid to education. We banned highway billboards. And we transformed the three modest state teachers' colleges into multipurpose colleges that now are universities.
Amazing. You talk about school consolidation back then. We're seeing this now becoming a real trend, a political movement here in Vermont. Chris, some of those things that Candy just mentioned, you know, pretty dramatic. Were there any folks, maybe Democratic colleagues at the State House at the time, who thought, hey, you're going a little too far, too fast to the left here? Did they ever try to talk to Phil Hoff and try to rein him in? Or was his unlikely victory producing kind of you lead, we'll follow mentality among Democrats who were just so excited to finally take back the executive office?
Well, a couple of things to say in response to that. One, there weren't many Democrats in the State House when Phil Hoff was elected. You know, he never had a Democratic majority. So what he accomplished was really bipartisan, working with, as Candy mentioned earlier, what we would call the Aiken Wynn of the Democratic Republican Party, people like Franklin Billings or Dick Mallory or Ernest W. Gibson, who had all come in around the same time, 1961, and had formed this study group that was called the Young Turks. and they became sort of the power going forward. You do really have to zero in on what Candy's talking about, and I guess we'll discuss it later. But a lot of what Phil Hoff wanted to do did not take place until after reapportionment of the legislature. So what Candy mentioned, the abolishment of the 246 overseers of the poor, that was 1967. And that's when you saw this sort of – in 66, 67, and somewhat less so in 68, you saw this torrent, you know, waterfall of liberal legislation starting to come out after reapportionment. Phil Hoff was fought by Republicans in his first term in the House. They denied him appointments. They refused to consider things. He really had a tough first 2 years in office because really there was a thinking that Phil Hoff was a fluke. And in 64, Republicans will again return to the chief executive's office. And as we'll talk about in a minute, 64 was anything more was completely different than that. One of the things that when you just mentioned, Mitch, the consolidation of school districts, what Phil Hoff did mostly in his arc of service was to move towards this regionalization and consolidation. When he took over, there were, you know, 800 school districts, 246 road commissioners, 246 overseers of the poor. He had a proposal. I don't remember the exact details, but it was like to, I think, have 12 consolidated school districts in the state. And we are seeing those debates today.
Right.
But when When I interviewed Phil Hoff for a historical documentary in 1989, he said that he felt that everything that happened in the state from 1963 to that date, 1989, had flowed out of his administration, that everything that was being considered, whether you're talking about the environment, clean water, whether you're talking about efficiency, government reorganization, that it had its seeds in his administration. And I would say that in a large part, he was right.
Well, in a 1999 interview with VPR's Bob Kinzel, Phil Hoff did speak about the political changes that were brought about by the reapportionment of the Vermont House.
It resulted in a decided shift in political power. So it wasn't just a shift from rural Vermont to urban Vermont, but it was more importantly a shift from rather conservative policies to a good deal more progressive policies. So much so, you know, that most people don't understand this, but I think it's pretty clear that Vermont, if not the most progressive state in the nation, is clearly one of them.
Well, Candy Page, we've got just about a minute before our first break here, but what was reapportionment? How fundamental was it to the changes that Phil Hoff presided over?
Well, in the until reapportionment, Victory, Vermont, population, I don't know, 30, had exactly as many votes in the Vermont House as Burlington, population 25,000. The rule was one town, one vote. So, of course, small town rural Vermont dominated the legislature. Many of the members were farmers. I read somewhere that sometimes a tiny town would send somebody to the legislature instead of sending them to the poor farm because it was cheaper. So this was a huge shift. Despite what Phil said, this really was a shift of power to more populated areas. And it meant more Democrats, not enough for a majority early on. But this was a huge shift in the way we thought about the role of government, because bigger places were more open to giving state government an active role.
Was that hard for – very briefly here because we do have to get to the break. But was that hard for him to get through, the reapportionment?
This happened on Phil's watch, and he supported it. But it was ordered by a U.S. Supreme Court decision which said – that one man, one vote had to be the rule in state legislatures. So it was – the question was the legislature going to do it or were they going to refuse and the court, federal courts would draw the districts?
Wow.
So.
Now, in 1989, Chris Graff, you interviewed Phil Hoff for Vermont PBS and asked the former governor how he'd like to be remembered.
The thing I look back upon with the greatest pride is that I cared. That more than anything else is what I'd like to be remembered for, that I cared what happened to that person at the lower end of the economic ladder, that I cared about the family of the fellow who works in a shop and both he and his wife have to work and there still aren't enough resources to adequately care for their family and do the job that they're called upon, that I really cared about what happened to the people of the state. That's what I'd like to be remembered more than anything else for. Whether it will... What I think I'm more likely to be remembered for, however, is the fact that I was the spirit point of really significant change in the state. And almost everything that's happened from that day to this really has had its genesis during my administration. That's what I suspect I'll be remembered for.
Chris Graff, do you think he's right?
I think he's remembered for both. And I don't think that I think clearly he was somebody who cared. He was the spirit of change in Vermont in ways that we will never see again and that we never saw before. He was there at a singular moment in Vermont history. I think that we can list, and Candy and I can go on for quite a while talking about the accomplishments because so much change did happen in those 6 years that he was governor. But he will be remembered more for the spirit that he brought, not only to his campaigns, but he was a champion of civil rights, of individual rights. He had very strong feelings People said in those years that he had about 16 ideas every minute, of which somebody else would be sent off to go and try to implement. But he clearly was the agent for change in Vermont. And you can look at a lot of factors that came together at that time. It wasn't just the Kennedy administration, but it really was about when LBJ took over. And all of the states saw this very dramatic change with the Great Society and all of the money coming in and grant money and a lot of human service programs. And Phil Hoff took advantage of every part of that as he reorganized the state.
He did go against LBJ, though, when it came to the Vietnam War. Isn't that right?
He did. And, you know, at some point we should talk about you know, he would be the first person to tell you that his third term was a bit of a disaster. He became much more preoccupied with national affairs, with civil rights, with what was happening in the presidential politics. But if we think about 1968, 1969, and 1970, we know that a lot of people did. And that, you know, Phil Hoff was a leader on the national stage, especially when it came – there was a moment when he was being considered as a possible vice presidential nominee for the Democratic Party. But he was seen as a champion. He was close to Bobby Kennedy at that time as well.
Kenny Page, Phil Hoff was not without his demons. And at some point, I guess he felt compelled to speak publicly about a drinking problem that he had. Is that correct?
Yes. We should say it right away that the culture of Montpelier during the legislature in those days, almost everybody spent the week in Montpelier because there weren't good roads to get back to your home. There was a lot of heavy drinking, and as Hoff later acknowledged, he had a serious drinking problem. He left the governorship early in 1969, and in 1970 he ran for the U.S. Senate. And there was a lot of behind the scenes talk about how the governor had a drinking problem, and he decided to confront it head on and appeared on television to say, "Yes, I had a drinking problem, but I no longer do. I'm sober." And many of his advisors, maybe all of them, urged him not to do that. But he felt it was a way to be honest with the people, although, in fact, it wasn't entirely honest because he didn't stop drinking entirely until the early 70s. At any rate, he ended up losing the race, obviously, for the U.S. Senate. And one of the ironies is that his Republican opponent, Winston Prouty, who was the incumbent, also was known as a very heavy drinker, but that never appeared in the public forum. So I always felt that Governor Hoff was never truly happy in his professional life after he finished being governor. You know, he returned to the state Senate for three terms in the 1980s. But it must be hard when you've been such a success in your mid to late 30s. After that, what else, you know, what mountains are left to climb?
Chris, does that jibe with what you know of Phil Hoff? Was he really happiest when he was governor of Vermont?
Absolutely. And he did very unusual things after being a governor in that he then became chair of the Democratic Party in Vermont in the 70s. I think at the time, I don't know since, but at the time, it was the first time a former governor had sort of gotten back in the trenches to do that. And then, as Candy said, he ran in 82 for a Chittenden County State Senate seat. He was the top vote getter, served three terms. And he was so frustrated. He was so unhappy. And he actually was at the time very critical of Governor Kunin at times, who was serving as governor at the time, because he was impatient and he felt she was not progressive enough. He clearly was, as Candy said, happiest when he was a governor.
That's sort of ironic in a way, thinking that Governor Kunin wasn't progressive enough. I mean, she was the first and still only female governor Vermont has ever had. Did he ever weigh in on women's issues, or was that not something that happened at the time?
Oh, no, he was very active in women's issues, and Candy helped me with this, but I believe he created the Commission on Women when he was governor.
He did. And yeah. Didn't he – I think he also served as chairperson of the Human Rights Commission in Vermont.
Yes, he did,
for
a
number
of
years.
Yeah, he did.
There are those who say that Philhoff became more liberal the older he got. It's supposed to be the other way around, but he ended up as a supporter of Bernie Sanders during the Occupy movement. I know he said to friends that he supported that. So he was a man who from very early, really, according to him anyway, since childhood, did care about the have-nots and wanted to defend them against the haves, and that continued until his death.
I'm so glad you brought up the name Bernie Sanders, because I want to throw this question out to both of you, and I don't know if this is a stretch or not, but I wonder about Philhoff in relation to Bernie Sanders, because I wonder if there are some very conservative folks in Vermont who look back on Philhoff and say this was terrible for Vermont, as popular as he may be in liberal circles, really a terrible guy, or is he more like Bernie Sanders in that Sanders seems to enjoy political support from all parts of Vermont. There are veterans who support Bernie Sanders. There are folks in the conservative parts of the Northeast Kingdom, perhaps, who say, yeah, you know, I'm not a liberal, but even this Democratic Socialist, I like Bernie. I like what he's doing. Did Philhoff enjoy that same kind of support?
I would say probably not in the broadest sense, but there are some big differences. Philhoff's political career was relatively short. He was governor for 6 years. Bernie Sanders has been, holding office in Vermont since 1980. Mm. So there's that. At the time, certainly Philhoff got more votes in the Northeast Kingdom than previous Democrats had done. And someone said to me that it was this charisma that he was almost seen as an aristocrat, a member of the elite who could still relate to people in rural areas, and that did bring him some votes. But all those little towns that lost power with reapportionment, yes, it was a court decision that drove it, but certainly Philhoff was seen as a scapegoat in many small towns.
Is that right, Chris? Do they still remember that?
Well, I would also say that we have to consider the difference in the times as well. And this might get us talking about off on a tangent, but in the 60s, there still was real racism in Vermont. You couldn't argue it. And Philhoff, especially in his final 2 years, was becoming much more of an advocate for projects. Like, he started a project with New York's mayor to bring minority youth to Vermont, the Vermont New York Youth Project. There was a case in Iversburg where shots were fired at the home of a black minister, Reverend David Lee Johnson, and the state police dragged its feet in that investigation. And Philhoff and some of the people very close to him were advocating, and I think they made real enemies of some people who really at that time were still very racist in their feeling.
And I think this is one thing that contributed to his defeat in 1970, because I remember I was a college student back then, but I remember the grumbling that went on in some circles in Vermont about how he had brought all these black kids to Vermont and it was importing crime and drugs here. And it probably lost him a number of votes.
We, in preparing for this show, we heard from so many people who remember Philhoff fondly, and among them, folks on the Vermont Arts Council. Apparently, he helped create the Vermont Council on the Arts in 1964. Is that right?
Well, that's one I missed, but I wouldn't doubt it, because it was during his term that Vermont Public Television began.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And well, then go ahead, Chris. Yes.
Well, you just I go back to his comment, which was sort of everything that grew out of his administration. I think he's absolutely right. You know, some of the things we could spend quite a while talking about his accomplishments, but some of the ones he was most proud of were things like what we now call VSAC, but you know, providing loans and grants to people seeking college. You know, there was just a lot going on, and part of that was there was so much that had to be done, and I don't think we can spend enough time emphasizing that. You know, when he took office, Vermont, he said that Vermont was still in, you know, 50 to 100 years behind the times. And I think he was absolutely right. Vermont state government was nearly invisible at that time. It really was run as 246 individual communities, and Candy made mention of the overseers of the poor. And what it absolutely meant, you know, was there was this very uneven and in some ways very harsh treatment of people who were poor in Vermont. And all of these things. So when he took over, and especially after he became more powerful in the legislature after reapportionment, there was just huge change that came to the state.
I'd like to read this email from Lynette Courtney in Greensboro, who says, our mom, Madine Holcomb Schmidt, was born in Vermont, grew up in Johnson, educated there. She was 42 when Governor Hoff was elected. I was 12, Lynette says. Madine was always a liberal, probably before that was a familiar term, and brought us up that way. Memories include a good-looking young man coming to Mount Vernon, where we grew up, to visit our church. My only other memory is the following summer when we were told we had been invited to the Vermont governor's house. I felt like I was in close proximity with royalty. It would take me another 50 years before moving back to Vermont and finding out how easy it was to meet and talk to our elected officials. And she says, I wish I had asked more of my mom about Phil Hoff when I had the chance. He had a real impact on people, for sure.
That's right. We should probably mention Phil's wife, Joan Hoff. He always described Joan as a more effective campaigner than he was himself. And she was seen as a real asset to him. And after he left the governorship, she had a career of her own. She was chair of the State Board of Education and took up causes like preventing child abuse and advocating for kids.
I want to ask both of you about, you know, the lasting effect of Phil Hoff and what he did, because it's not as though there haven't been Republican governors in Vermont since then. We've got one right now with Phil Scott. Jim Douglas was a popular Republican governor. However, would you say that in those two examples, Jim Douglas and Phil Scott, that a certain kind of Republican governor will be elected in Vermont? In other words, we're not going to no one's going to confuse Jim Douglas or Phil Scott with a Republican governor from, let's say, Kansas or some of the more conservative red states. Did Phil Hoff set that stage for saying you could be a Republican governor, but, you know, you're going to have some of the liberalism that I brought in as the first Democratic governor in 100 years?
I think we really would have to say that that's not so much that Phil Hoff, but the way Vermont has changed so dramatically in the years that began with him. But if you know, our population has grown by 2/3. Many people who live here now come from elsewhere. What we have genuinely now is a two-party state. We may be very liberal, but if you're a Republican, you can be elected governor, especially, I think, Vermonters still like fiscal conservatives.
But I also think that you have to understand what governors were like in those 100 years, much of those 100 years that Republicans governed Vermont, except for governors like George Aiken or Governor Gibson. They were caretaker governors. The governors in the 50s, it wasn't so much that they were conservative. They were absolutely this is harsh, but they were do-nothing governors. And that was the philosophical approach to, you know, state government was not as important as local control.
One person I have talked to recently summed it up this way. Phil Hoff took Vermont by the scruff of the neck and gave it a good shaking.
I think we're going to leave that comment right there as the last one. It has been so wonderful to talk with both of you, given your institutional knowledge of this man in Vermont politics in general. Chris Graff and Candace Page, thank you so much for joining us today to talk
My
about
pleasure.
The legacy
Great
of Phil
to
Hoff.
Talk about Phil.
Thanks for having us.